You're listening to Gaming Night Radio, the perfect podcast for your gaming night, with reviews, news, discussions, and calling out bullshit in the gaming industry. Along with your host, longtime gamer, master of the obvious, and grumpiest old man, Matt Ailey. What's going on? What's going on? What is going on, good people? Welcome to episode 2 of Gaming Night Radio. Thank you for listening. I appreciate that you're here. This is a brand new podcast. I forgot what word I was going to say. What are these things called again? I don't quite remember. This is a brand new podcast. You don't know me, but yet you're taking a chance to come hang out. And I'm very glad you are here. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Because this week, this is the week we've been waiting for such a long time, and it is finally here. Summer Games Fest just kicked off. E3 is just around the corner, and you know what? We're just getting started. So this week, I'm going to be bringing you my thoughts and highlights from the shows. What did I think of them overall? What games stuck out to me? What did I like? What did I didn't like? I'm going to be bringing it to you. You can find it right here on Gaming Night Radio. Wherever you find your favorite podcasts, that is where we are. That's where we will be soon, if I can talk. And maybe we just won't be anywhere because I'll just forget to talk, and then it just won't be a good podcast. But anyway, moving on. Today, we're talking about the Summer Games Fest kickoff show. That happened. I just finished watching it not too long ago. It was a bit late. During the day, I look after my kid, and we hang out and, you know, spend a good day together. But in the evening, I got time to sit down, watch the Game Fest kickoff show, and it was interesting. I'll give you my thoughts on that as we get going here. And also, the day before, I didn't want to post it because I didn't feel like there was enough for one whole episode, but we're also going to be talking about Battlefield 2042, which I am honestly surprisingly excited about. So we'll dig into that. So we got lots of content to dig through today. I have lots of questions for you. And if you have thoughts, questions, topics, content you'd like to see on the podcast, you can contact me at gamingnightradio@gmail.com. And with that all out of the way, let's move on into our first topic for today, the Summer Games Fest kickoff show. Overall, I thought it was all right. I don't know what you thought about it or how you were feeling, but overall, I thought it was all right. I mean, there were some peaks there, but for me, it was kind of like just there. It wasn't like the most exciting presentation I've ever been to or witnessed on the internet. I don't know. I was just missing that hype level. And I think maybe it was just me. Because I'm sure there was a lot of other people excited about it. I'm sure there was, because there was a lot of great games that were showing up. There was some big announcements and big reveals that people have been waiting for such a long time that a lot of people were excited for. But for me, it was just kind of like, all right. It was kind of like the Game Awards without the awards part. And like, there was a variety of different games, which is a really good thing, but nothing really got me, like, that hyped. Well, there's a couple things that got me pretty excited, but I don't know. For me, overall, and I don't know if it's just the way it's put together, or what is it? I'm gonna have to look into it a little bit more and try and dissect what just isn't working for me. And it might honestly be the fact that, like, it's just an online presentation. Like, it's lacking the audience. It's lacking that physical energy in the location. Because there is something. I'll tell you. And this is coming from me, like, as a performer and someone who's stood on a stage in front of a whole bunch of people and someone who stood on a stage in front of, like, 3 or 4 people. There is a difference when there is an audience. It makes such a huge difference. It brings an incredible energy to the room, gets you all hyped and excited, and a different energy to the presenters and the performers. So for me, I'm like, maybe it's just lacking the audience. Maybe it's just lacking the audience and that energy. And I don't think there's anything wrong with what Jeff did there, Jeff Keighley, but I don't know. For me, it was just kind of lacking a little bit. But anyway, I thought there were some pretty cool moments, so let's really get on to that. That's just kind of overall thoughts about that. But let's get into the cool moments that I thought were actually pretty good in this presentation. So we have the long-awaited Elden Ring that got revealed from Software, and it's launching in January 21st, 2022. Now, I haven't played any From Software games, so like, I get there's a lot of hype behind these games, and everyone's super excited. They're like, "Oh my God, Elden Ring, finally!" I'm just like, "Yeah, okay, man, that looked cool. That looked cool." I'm not saying it looked bad. I just, you know, I'm not on that same hype level as everyone else, because I haven't been playing these games. And you know what? Maybe I should start. The world and creature design, though, I have to say, looked pretty great. It looked pretty great. Like, there was that big, giant golden tree. That looked really cool. I was loving the world and the design. It was kind of gothic, but also you had that almost, that fantasy element, kind of like Lord of the Rings. So it had a really cool kind of world, creature, design, vibe, art style going on. I really actually liked it a lot. The graphics looked all right. Definitely last gen. You can tell this game was made for last gen consoles, but I'm sure the updated, you know, PS5, Xbox Series X, Xbox Series S consoles will look better, those graphics, other than what we saw in the trailer. And it's still like 7 months out, so there's time. But I thought they looked all right. They didn't look terrible. They weren't blowing my mind, but they looked all right. Story-wise, I literally have no idea what's going on. Maybe other people do, but I had clearly no idea. And overall, the gameplay itself looked pretty good, and you can be sure you're going to die a lot, because that's what they do best. This next game, really got my attention. It was very exciting. I was like, oh man, this looks sweet. And that's Jurassic World Evolution 2. Number one, I'm just so you know, I'm a huge like dinosaur nerd. just love dinosaurs. Like, if you ever watch like Mitchell's versus the Machines, the little brother who's all like, "Raptor claw, man, raptor high five, bam, dinosaur." I'm like, yeah, that was totally me growing up. That was so me. So I'm such a dinosaur nerd, and I've loved the Jurassic Park franchise ever since I first laid eyes on it. Just a masterpiece. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful film. And I like the first Jurassic World Evolution too. So this really works in my wheelhouse here, because I love dinosaurs, and I also love that game type that the Jurassic World Evolution games are bringing to the table. That managing of a park, creating your own park, and being able to manage the dinosaurs, and putting different combinations in different pens, and seeing exactly how they're going to react to each other. Are they going to murder each other instantly? Are they just going to be able to hang out? Like, that's all part of the experimentation, especially when you're talking the predators, because you don't know which ones, like, there's some combinations you can put in there and it's fine, and there's other combinations where they instantly kill each other. There's other combinations where they'll be fine for a little while, but eventually get sick of each other's shit and just eat each other. So like, there was just a lot of excitement around that. They did get a release date, 2021. I'm feeling doubtful a little bit about that, just because there is no gameplay at all. Maybe another presentation we'll get some gameplay, but I'm feeling like if you're not showing gameplay, but you're saying 2021, it's kind of like, I don't know, a little iffy for me. So if it gets delayed, I won't be surprised. If it comes out in 2021, this year, later on, I'll be excited. I'll be hyped. And I did, of course, have to go check out the website, just to see what they had going on there, because they did kind of like hint at a few things in the presentation, but the website confirms it, and I just want to read a couple sections for you real quick. So, in Jurassic World Evolution 2, for the very first time, players will build their parks beyond the confines of the Muertes Archipelago. That's how you say that, right? Archipelago? I don't know. Each location brings new terrain and fresh challenges for players to contend with using deep, detailed management tools, I like that, and creative options. Across this range of beautiful new biomes, including dense forests, scorched deserts, they'll contain, conserve, and care for more than 75 prehistoric species, including the all-new, highly requested flying and marine reptiles. That's what I'm talking about there, right there, folks. That's what I'm talking about right there. Give me some pterodactyls. Give me some mosasaurs up in here. Man, that is actually really, really exciting. It'll be cool to see how you design your park with, the flying guys, you're going to have, like, those bird cages probably thing, type of thing. But I'm really excited to see how you're going to manage your park when it comes to the aquatic dinosaurs as well. Like, are you going to be able to create, like, these fish tanks, like, manually create them yourself and have, like, these little maybe submarine tours or something as the dinosaurs swim by? That would be pretty cool. Especially because in the first game, you could ride some of the tours, right? And, like, kind of get a first-person view. That would be something. So anyway, it's pretty much the rest of it. You know, there's a new campaign that kind of follows after Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom when all the dinosaurs are released. So that's kind of the setting there. And Jeff Goldblum is going to be back to do some voicing for Ian Malcolm. And Bryce Dallas Howard is back for Claire. So it's going to be very similar to the first game, I'd imagine. But, you know, just bringing in all these different elements in there. So I loved the first one. It's great to just jump in there when you have some spare time to game and you just want to, like, relax and just manage some people and, you know, sometimes watch someone get eaten by a velociraptor, like, so. So I'm very excited about this game. This one for me was honestly the most exciting thing. And I know for many people, you're going to be like, what? That was the most exciting thing for you? And for me, it was, because I love dinosaurs and I love me some Jurassic Park. All right, let's move on to the next game here that I thought was really, really interesting. And this was the one, I think, did they kick the show off with this? I think they kicked the show off with this. And that was Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. And that looked absolutely charming. That's the one thing about the Borderlands series. They have this comedic quirk kind of charm to them that's very interesting, as well as that art style is, it's iconic. Really, right? Like, it's so different from anything else you see in gaming. And it's really, when you see that art style, you're like, Borderlands. This is Borderlands. Like, instantly recognizable with the brand. And Wonderlands has that art style too, but, like, just the different dragons and the animals and the magic spells. It's like, and what was that horse is called? What was that horse called? Or that unicorn that came through? It had a funny-ass name, and I can't even remember what it was. Damn, I should have wrote it down. But it's just that kind of charm, that comedic sense that these games have. I love that they're bringing it into Wonderlands, especially because Tiny Tina herself is quite the character. But yeah, it's obviously connected to Borderlands. I know they said, like, it is its own thing, but it's obviously, if you have Tiny Tina in there, there's obviously a connection to Borderlands. Okay, let me slow down for a sec. Because I'm talking faster, my brain's going faster than my mouth, and my mouth is having a hard time keeping up, so let me just slow it on down a little bit. It kind of gives the impression that Tiny Tina is actually maybe narrating or reading this story, and all the characters you're playing are these characters that exist within the story, within Borderlands. So it's like a story within a story kind of thing. But I mean, if you love Borderlands, I'm sure you're gonna love this, because it just looks like Borderlands with fantasy and magic. Also, I do have to point out the cast looks freaking awesome. I love the cast. Andy Samberg, Will Arnett, Wanda Sykes. Anytime you throw Wanda Sykes in anything, whether it's live action or voice acting, she's always just knocking it out of the park. Then you got Ashley Burch in there as well. So you got really incredible talent coming to this game. And it's always good to add incredible talent to your projects. So I'm really excited to see how this one plays out. And it should be awesome. It should be awesome to, like, grab your friends, jump into this fantasy wonderland that's, you know, kind of kooky and crazy and just silly, and have a great time. So I'm actually excited about that one. One thing that also happened during this presentation, this Summer Games Fest kickoff, is we actually had a few Hollywood actors pop up. Now, usually I'm not a big fan of that kind of style. Usually I just kind of like, God, what are they doing here? Like, it's usually just kind of like a gimmicky thing, and sometimes it is, but I actually thought today's appearances were pretty good. I thought each one was actually pretty good. It didn't bug me. It didn't annoy me. It was like, wow, I'm actually glad these guys, you know, appeared for this. This was interesting stuff. The one that was the weakest, I would say, is Ryan Reynolds, right? Because he was just showcasing a trailer for his movie. But like, the guy's funny enough, and he's got the charisma and the charm that it works. It works. So everyone's, you know, it's always good to see Ryan Reynolds and Jeff Goldblum showing up. It's always a pleasure, especially because he announced the game I'm most excited about out of this whole thing, which I know to some people is going to be like, why is this your favorite, most anticipated game? And it's just because it is, people. I'm a dinosaur nerd. What am I going to do? What am I supposed to do? But the standout one was Giancarlo Esposito's interview. That was awesome. That was really, really awesome. Maybe not to everyone, but I found it so interesting to be able to dig into the mind of a master actor and see how he prepares for the roles. And it was interesting how he, you know, relayed to his different characters and talked about them and how he approaches these various villains and how he's approaching this new character in Far Cry 6. And is he really actually a villain or not? You know, or is, you know, to Giancarlo, obviously he's the villain of the game. He's the antagonist. But, you know, the way Giancarlo looks at him, you know, and how, what angle he's coming into this role, I just found very, very interesting. And this guy's been blowing up over the last couple years, right? Whether it's from, Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad. That's the one. Breaking Bad before that, which is... Better Call Saul, I guess, was the prequel-ish kind of spin-off thing to that one. Whether it's Moff Gideon in the Star Wars, you know, The Mandalorian. This guy, he's just been blowing up. You see him so many places lately. But, and especially as villains, because he kills it. He kills it as villains. Like, he's just so cold, calculating. You can, like, confident. And he's not freaking out. And that's really the difference when you look at, like, the Empire and the First Order, right? Like, they're always screaming and yelling and having fits about something. The Empire was scary because they were calm as hell. Like, all the villains, Vader, Tarkin, calm as hell. If there's shit going down and they are not losing their shit, they are stone cold serious, like, that is scary. And that's what he brings to Gideon, too, and that's what I loved it. But this interview, I thought, actually was... like, the best part of all, having those kind of stars show up. This was the most interesting one, and I'm really glad how he presented the character. I thought that was really cool. Interesting to go into the mind of a master actor. It will be unfortunate, though, if the game sucks. If Far Cry 6 sucks, it will be unfortunate, because he is incredible, incredible talent. The one other kind of star appearance, I'm going to give him a star category, was the Kojima stuff. Like, I get it. I get who he is and why he's a big deal. I love Metal Gear as much as the next person. Like, Metal Gear Solid 1 was the first game I ever wrapped. I love that series. It's a lot of fun. But honestly, that interview with him was, like, too long. You know what I mean? Like, I get he was coming to share, like, well, the Death Stranding director's cut, which I assumed the original game was his cut. So I don't know why he needs another cut, but I don't know, whatever. we'll see how that goes. But I get he was presenting that game, which the little present trailer itself was weird. I get it was, again, a Metal Gear throwback, but I was just like, what is going on here? What are we doing here? But I just thought that interview was kind of like too long for him to like vaguely hint and nothing. And maybe when his next project comes out, we'll go back and look in this interview and be like, oh my god, he laid it all out. We just didn't have any clue. Maybe. But as far as I'm standing, it's kind of like, you know, it would have been good. Get him in there. Quick little video. Introduce, like, hey, I don't got anything coming for the new project, but check this out kind of thing. But instead, it was this really vague back and forth that kind of said nothing, and I was like, okay, let's move on. If we're not talking about it, let's just move on. If you have nothing to say, move on. And I got to remind myself that all the time, especially as I'm working on this podcast and trying to get better. If you have nothing to say about shit, stop talking, move on, man. So I share the advice that I give myself with them. If you have nothing to say, move the hell on. Okay, I've repeated myself way too much. Overall, again, I felt like it was all right. But I will, the one thing I really did overly enjoy about this presentation, other than all the things I mentioned, the specific games, I will celebrate the vast diversity of games that were there. Because that is always a good thing. It's not, you know, all the games that I'm into, and I didn't like everything, and I didn't get excited about everything, but that's a good thing. That's a good thing, because that means there's a wide and strong diversity of games out there, so everyone can find what they love to play. It's not just all targeted at me. Not every game is the same. There's a nice diversity of games out there, and that's always a good thing. So I hope in this presentation, you also found something that you loved. What'd you think of the Summer Game Fest kickoff? What games stuck out to you? Let me know what's on your mind. Alright, so heading into the next topic here, early on the 9th, we also got our first look at Battlefield 2042. Okay. That was just a trailer, so let's all calm down. We're going to get some gameplay on, I believe it's the 13th, at the Xbox presentation. But I will say about this trailer, like, it wasn't short, it wasn't like a 2-minute trailer, this was 5 minutes. It got me pretty damn excited. This was a pretty hype trailer. Music aside, the music didn't do too much for me. But I was really loving and eating up what I was seeing. I don't even play Battlefield. I haven't played Battlefield since, I think, Battlefield 4. I've missed, like, everything in between then. But I don't know. I'm in on this game. This looks exciting as hell. So let me just quickly break down the things that I saw that I liked and the things that are problematic for me. And let's do that real quick here. So, number one, beautiful game. Number one, beautiful game, right? You got the Frostbite engine on full display. Beautiful colors, beautiful graphics, environments were just top notch. And that was a really cool thing to see. And how all the different environments kind of had this different, you know, I guess I'll talk about the different various environments as we go, but the game itself and what they've been able to create with the Frostbite engine is just truly, truly beautiful. I know it is not direct gameplay. It is in-engine, though. The trailer was done in-engine, and I know the in-engine stuff can sometimes look better than the gameplay. But overall, we're talking about the Frostbite engine here. It is one of the best-looking engines in gaming. It really, really is. As much as it drives a lot of developers nuts who aren't working on first-person shooter games, it creates some really beautiful environments and dynamics. Like, you look at those Star Wars Battlefront games, as flawed as they were, damn, they had some beauty to them. They were really, really good games. So I just loved, like, how it looked. Right away, it just stuck out, especially the Neon City at night, right? It's like, wow, that's gonna be beautiful to play in. So we're getting 7 maps to start off with. And these are massive maps. Like, these are supposedly very large maps, which is good, because that's what I like about the Battlefield series. You get these big battles, while Call of Duty's a little bit more tighter. I love, I guess, not anymore, because you got Warzone and all the other different stuff, but it used to be a little bit tighter. Battlefield was always about these big, massive battles, and of course, the battlefield. So, at launch, we're getting 7 massive maps. Okay, on next-gen, PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X/S, and I'm assuming also on PC, you're going to be getting 120 players per side. So 240 people on this map. So yeah, it's going to be a good size, and it's going to be awesome to be able to play with that many people. If you're still rocking the old-gen, though, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, you're going to be limited to 60 people. 60 people a side. Okay, so you're going to get kind of half the people, but that's not a bad thing either, especially playing in the older consoles. You got to do what the consoles are able to keep up with. But next gen, if you're on next gen, 120 players aside, which is pretty awesome. You're gonna have those dynamic maps with that levolution thing they've been bringing in for the last couple games, which honestly I really like. I haven't played it, but I've seen trailers, I've seen gameplay. it's such an interesting idea, and to completely like change up the map or change elements of the map midway through the battle. So like you're just getting comfortable, you're just getting familiar, and that's like, bam, here comes a new element into this game to shake things up. I love that idea, and I love that they're still keeping with it. Like we saw the rocket ship on that one, the tornado. Come on, man. Come on. That I'm also a huge like storm tornado nerd too. It's ridiculous. Jurassic Park and tornadoes, man. That was my life as a kid. Okay, I was a storm chaser, and also I love dinosaurs. I was a dinosaur storm chaser. That what was going on back when old Maddie was like 6 years old. As a dinosaur storm chaser. Okay, so to see that tornado in the game was actually really, really cool. And I want to see how that actually kind of works into gameplay. Are you going to get sucked away? Like, is that actually going to happen? Is it going to throw all the vehicles and just completely rip up the map and change the dynamic completely? I'm excited to see how these levolutions are actually going to work. And I'll go now to the various environments that I was kind of getting into before, but, you know, I kind of want to put in this section because I thought the various environments were really great. If we're getting seven massive maps, it's important that each one is varied. Each one is very different than the other. You're not looking at the same map over and over and over again with slight adjustments or like, oh, now it's nighttime kind of thing, right? You need a good variety as far as the environments go. We got a shipyard. There's a mountain range. There's like those ice sheets, which look really cool. And again, I'll go back to that neon city. That neon city in a desert? In a red desert? I don't know what was going on there, but that is the first map I want to play. Listen, the mountains look beautiful. Listen, wherever that rocket is, it looked beautiful. Those ice sheets looked pretty damn cool. But that neon city, that is the first place I want to go because it's just going to be complete candy for the eyes. And if you can do all that verticality, like these are the questions, and this brought up a lot of questions when I'm watching this trailer and I'm looking at these maps. I'm like, man, how accurate is this trailer as far as where you can go in these maps? You know what I mean? Like the very beginning, like these guys get pushed off the side of a mountain and they fall all the way and one guy goes into a wingsuit and kind of flies away. Like, is there that level of verticality in this game? Are the maps actually that big and that full? On the Neon City, they're on the rooftop. Can we actually get up to the rooftops of these like super huge structures? And is there actually interiors to these buildings that you have to go up the stairway, or is there like a lift on the side, or what exactly is the deal? Do you have to get airdropped up there? I don't know. But if they also have interiors, or at least partial interiors for this thing, that's pretty awesome. So that's kind of my question, like how far can you actually go on these maps, and how big and how full and how detailed are these maps? Because I think that's going to make a difference. Like when you say seven maps at launch, I know that was my first reaction. A lot of people's first reactions is kind of like, what? Only seven maps? That's a little light on content given the price of this thing. And we'll get into the price right away. But if they're literally that big, if they're literally that detailed and that and full of different places, you can go alleyways, indoors, you can get to like the tops of buildings, you can go maybe, I don't know, if there's like sewers or something, or fly up if the skybox is really high for the jets. Like, if there is all that different stuff going on in the environment, in these maps, and they're complex, and they're detailed, and they're full of opportunities and different ways to play every time you play, well, then those maps are worth it, right? Then that would really, really be worth it. So we'll just have to wait and see exactly how that plays out. But it brings up, man, so many questions. Now, I was mixed at first on the multiplayer-only aspect. Now, personally, I'm thinking it's not that bad. When I look at the trailer, when I look at the gameplay, look what they're presenting, and we'll have to just wait and see till the 13th to actually get that gameplay. But I'm thinking it's not that bad. Because really, I think Battlefield campaigns never were my favorite. The Battlefront 2 campaign honestly did nothing for the game. I mean, like, we were hyped it was there when it came, when it was coming out, and when that game actually came out, not to mention all the crappy microtransactions of bullshit that game had going on. The campaign did not add anything, and it was pretty bad. Narratively and gameplay-wise, so it's like, okay. So if you don't have a campaign, maybe that's not such a bad thing. I think it is a really good thing that they're able to focus on the multiplayer, focus on these maps, and just give it their all on, you know, something that everyone's going to want to play. The $70 thing, is that worth it? Is it not? Again, we'll go into it in just a quick sec, but that's part of the question too, right? Like, how do you charge $70 without a campaign? Well, if the campaign's shit and doesn't really add to the game, well then, what, at the end of the day, kind of what's it matter, right? Like, if the campaign is shit, what's it matter? If you're getting really deep, rich maps and gameplay and systems, then, you know, that's a thumbs up. But again, we'll just have to wait and see exactly what we're going to see in the 13th and when this game eventually does come out. But I'm not as mixed anymore in the multiplayer aspect. I think that's okay. Because if you're looking for a campaign, play Halo, man. Play any other game, shooting game that has a campaign. Like, if this is just gonna be multiplayer, honestly, I'm fine with it. I've come to terms with it, and I'm okay, because I didn't feel like lately we've been missing out on too much. Again, we'll see if there's some also engaging systems in there, right? Like, not grindy, but just really engaging, challenging you to continually get better. And giving you things at a fair rate, not just making you grind and grind and grind for the tiniest little things, right? Just a really engaging system. And again, really full maps. And that verticality. If it has that verticality in the maps too. Like, I think, yeah, that's just going to work out really well. So we'll just have to wait and see. But I was mixed on the multiplayer. Now I am not. Okay, so those are the things that I actually liked and had questions and I'm excited about. Things that I don't like, obviously, the price. Oh my gosh, guys. I don't like the price. Even knowing we don't know what we're going to get or how complex it's going to be, I really don't like the price. I really don't like the price. $60 and $60 American, $80 Canadian for the old gen, $70 American, $90 Canadian for the next gen. Like, I'm Canadian, right? So I'm not paying the $70. I'm paying the $90. Like, do I want to put $90 down on a game? On a game? Like, that to me is so expensive. And again, it just depends, I guess, on the value they're going to be offering. And then the big question, if they're going to have microtransactions. Okay? Now, if they're going to have lots of microtransactions, then there is no way in hell that game should be $70 American. $90 Canadian, because you're going to make money back on all your microtransactions. Now, we know they will have battle passes, one free and one paid for each season. So you can have one free battle pass and you can pay for one in each season. And so we know there is some kind of level of microtransaction in there as well. How much of the battle passes are, I don't know. If it is only the battle pass system, I can accept that. Again, depending how much they are, but I can accept that, especially if it's leading into future content. But, like, if there's a whole bunch of other microtransactions in there too, like, this is where pricing just gets really, really iffy. And, like, we talked about it already, right? Like, that cost versus value aspect. Like, are they pricing people out of these games? Are they throwing too much cost at us before they really show us the value or provide the value? These things I get so split on, because it's like, yeah, is it worth it? Is it not? Like, and it's hard to know without playing the game, but you can't play the game without buying it. So it's just, it's a tough kind of thing. But the pricing is the worst for the cross-gen people. So if you buy the old-gen versions, for $60, $80 Canadian, right? If you buy the old gen versions, you don't automatically get that next gen edition when you upgrade. If you buy the $60 one, you have to buy the next gen one when you upgrade. The cross-gen editions, where you'd get both, have been confined to the expensive editions of this game, which the cheapest one is $99 American, which is the gold edition. $99 American, roughly $120 Canadian. So that's pretty shit. Like, already, that's something that's like, red flag. Red flag, like, that's a complete money move. Right? Either you pay the $60-$70 now, or, you know, either you pay the $60 now, have to pay the $70 later, or you already pay the higher amount now, then you don't have to pay it later. Like, it's just, oh, I don't like that. That is a red flag. I also seen looking up on this thing, looking at the editions, I see they also come with epic skin bundles. And again, skin bundles and then different rarities. Again, that worries me because, again, microtransactions. And how much are these things going to be? If these skin bundles are like $16-$17, man, this game's dead. How can you justify charging $70 for the base game, which is just multiplayer, right? Charging people for battle passes. Well, you get the one free one, but, you know, if you want the other one, which probably has the best content in it, you have to pay. And then also having, you know, possibly expensive microtransactions. If the microtransactions are like $4 a skin, well, okay. Okay. I mean, the fact that they're in there honestly pisses me off. I think if they're in there, you don't need to charge $70. But if they're in there and they're cheap, well, that's one thing. But if they're like higher, like the rest of the game industry has been doing lately, $16-$17 a skin, bro, that's not good. That's not good. And I think you're going to get a lot of pushback for that. So there's a lot of things we have to wait for when it comes to this game. There's a lot of things we have to wait for. There's a lot of things to be excited about. I mean, the gameplay, the different dynamics and the different systems in there and the possible size of the maps and how deep and how dynamic they are is really, really exciting. But also, when you look at this game, it's like, oh, how can they monetize this? Like, this game could get monetized to hell and back, right? And they're charging already that $70 jump, that $90 bump for the next gen editions. And if you want to get both, you already have to get the gold one, which is, again, $99 American, 100 plus bucks, right? Then there's another edition on top of that. So already, to me, it's like, and they're already pushing that, you know, that money, that bring in the money aspect. So if they have a microtransaction store and it's really expensive too, it's like, man, dead in the wall. Like, this, I don't know if I'd be able to buy this game and support it just because of that level of microtransactions. And that's EA for you, right? Like, EA's been known to do that shit. And Battlefront 2, again, was just a complete mess. Like, Battlefront 2 was pay to win. Loot boxes, microtransactions, everything was locked. It was going to take forever and just a huge, massive grind to actually unlock, you know, just one of the heroes at the time. And like, classic ones, iconic ones that you played in the first game were locked, right? So if they do something like that again, if they go that direction, then it's going to be bad. But we'll see what they learn. We'll see their tactic. I'll hold my judgment till then. But while I'm excited, I am actually not excited. I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm going to wait and see, because there's a couple red flags here already as far as the monetization of this game goes. So we'll have to wait and see what they show. So I'm not going to pre-order it. I'm optimistic about it, cautiously. I'm feeling pretty positive about what they're showing. And I think overall the community is positive about it. So at the end of the day, it becomes theirs to lose. Because I think this is going to be a win, unless they F it up. Unless they put in some huge microtransaction bullshit and fuck it up. It's theirs to lose. I think this is already a win. People are excited about it. So let's see what they do. What did you think of Battlefield 2042? What'd you think of the reveal trailer? Are you excited to play this? Let me know what's on your mind. And that's all for today's episode of Gaming Night Radio. Let me know what's going on inside that melon of yours. What are your thoughts on today's topics? You can contact me at gamingnightradio@gmail.com. I'll be back as the week goes on and we get some more great gaming announcements. This has been episode 2. I'm Matt Ayalu. Thank you for listening, and until E3, bye-bye. You've been listening to Gaming Night Radio, the perfect podcast for your gaming nights with discussions, reviews, news, and calling out bullshit in the gaming industry. Follow me on Twitter @GKRadioMan. Thanks for listening. See you next time.